Welcome to the January 22nd, 2024 Finance and Administration Committee meeting. And we'll now begin. Please stand with me. Director Colley, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Tonight, I will provide some announcements on the procedures for tonight's meeting. The meeting is being conducted in person at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant boardroom. As a convenience, members of the public may also participate virtually by listening or making comments to the committee by using a call-in number or a Zoom webinar link provided in the packet. In the event there is a disruption of phone or internet service, which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. Public comment cards are located on the table outside the boardroom. Please complete and return to Erica Dill to help expedite your comment. The procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from the committee members. All committee members are present tonight. And item number two is public comments on the agenda. Do we have any public comments?
I do not have any public comments at this time, although I believe a member of our audience was considering one at this time. Cam Noltmeyer, were you planning on general comments right now? Not at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
With that, then I move on to the agenda. Next item on the agenda, please note that the agenda has two items on there, labeled two. What I will do is my script here has provided the correct numbering order for each agenda item. So I would name them off that way. And we don't have that many agenda items tonight, so it shouldn't be too hard to keep track, for me anyway. So with that, we move on to item number two, or number three under agenda item, which is, what is it? I need to practice this a little bit. Let's see. This will be presented by Rochelle Patterson. It's an interview of ratepayer advocate candidates and recommend approval for the general manager to enter into a contract with the final candidate for the ratepayer advocate. Rochelle?
Right. Real quick, before I introduce the first candidate, just we have about 30 minutes per candidate because we don't want to be here all night. So each of them have a quick presentation. You'll have time for questions based on the proposals or the selection criteria, which you were given. And then we will move on to the second one. I think they are all hybrid, so they were asked not to call in until 6:05 to have some separation of the two candidates. And then we will bring them in, do the same process, and then we'll have public comment and open it up for committee discussion. So our first candidate is from the firm Rothtellis, and we have John Wright. He's the senior manager there to go through their proposal.
Hello. Am I turned on, Rochelle? Can you guys hear me all right? Fantastic. Well, thank you for having my firm here tonight to interview for the Ratepayer Advocate Project. As Rochelle indicated, my name is John Wright. I work with the firm Raftellis. I'm actually based in the Temecula and Murrieta area of Riverside County. And tonight there are hopefully three other members of the Raftellis staff that are joining us on a virtual basis. But they were part of our project team and our proposal. One of them is Mr. Sudhir Partiwala. Sudhir is an executive vice president with Raftellis, who's based in Arcadia. And Sudhir has sort of been the cornerstone of our California rate consulting practice for 25, 30 years or so. Another person is Ms. Angie Flores. And Angie is actually based in Austin, Texas. And she is getting ready to start a project with Austin Water, serving as their ratepayer advocate in a very similar process. And then finally, we also have Ms. Gina DePinto. Gina is based in Orange County, and she leads our strategic communication public outreach practice here in California. May I go to the slide presentation? Oh, fantastic. Thank you. I have a very short presentation. I promise I'll go through it quickly. Next slide, please. Raftellis is a national firm, and we probably have at this point around 8 or 10 offices around the United States. Our primary office in California is based in Los Angeles, and we obviously perform rate studies and financial planning, rate design for utilities all over the country. And I think we're up to about 180 consultants right now. What I want to focus on just for one moment is our California experience. We've been doing rate studies in California for a very long time and have many clients. There's nothing special about this list. It's just a subset of the clients we've served over the years. Next slide, please. So when we think about the ratepayer advocate role based on the agency's RFP, I think that we see it as really having three main components. One is providing assistance to staff as they perform their rate study. And what we think our assistance can help staff do is we think that staff can help develop a revenue requirement from rates as part of the financial planning process that will allow you to identify those costs that you need to recover and how much ratepayer revenue you need in order to maintain financial sufficiency and financial stability for the agency. And then within that context, we think we can also be very, very helpful to staff in ensuring that cost allocations that are made in the rate study process comply with Prop 218, at least the intent of Prop 218. We can't guarantee that. And then finally, a natural outcome of that is the development of rates that will comply with the intent of Proposition 218. So we see the technical advice as being a key starter of this process. In the middle box is this notion of balancing the agency needs or agency desires from a financial and policy perspective, what you would like to achieve with customer interests. And this, in our mind, would include things like ensuring that the revenue that you want to collect from ratepayers is appropriate in terms of your O&M expenses, your PAYGO, pay-as-you-go CIP, your existing debt service obligations, your target reserve balances, debt service coverage, that sort of thing. And we also think that we can help minimize rate impacts on customers by ensuring that that revenue requirement is appropriate. And possibly we can also help staff in the financial planning process minimize swings in rates such that we have a more smooth and predictable increase in rates to the extent we need to. And we think that what that will help do for the agency is to facilitate customer acceptance. And then finally, the last box is, I must admit, a little bit of a repeat of the first box. And it's this notion of compliance with industry standards and Proposition 218. And as part of the public outreach process, I think that we're going to help you achieve a situation where your customers accept what you've done, or at least understand it in a fully transparent manner. And this final box is ensuring that you have a rate study report and also a ratepayer advocate report that provides an outstanding administrative record that documents all of the assumptions, all of the technical methodologies that were used in case you were ever questioned on it. And then that's going to help you minimize the risk of Prop 218 litigation from our perspective. Next slide, please. Okay, this notion of independence, I understand that we're going to be assisting staff in the development of the outcome of the rate study. And so we're kind of balancing two hats here. On one hand, we're assisting staff, but I think we also need to have in mind the interests of your customers and ensuring that they are not paying rates that are, I hesitate to use this word, but I'm going to use it, excessively high for whatever reason, and that are appropriate, and ensuring that no customer classes are necessarily discriminated against by the way the rates are structured, that sort of thing. And so this concept of independence, we think, is really, really important, and that there's a balance that has to be made between staff and the agency and your customers. And of course, the board is a critical part of that, because you will be hearing about the, you'll be reading the rate study report. Depending on how Rochelle structured it, you may be briefed on the rate study process while it's underway, and you'll be the key decision makers to determine if the appropriate balance has been reached. And what we want to ensure for you is that we recognize the need to be independent, as opposed to just saying, oh yeah, you guys want to have 12% annual rate increases, that's great. The question is why is that appropriate? And secondarily, the last bullet on this sheet is to basically make sure that everything that's done is under the umbrella of industry standard methodologies, which are basically published by the American Water Works Association, as well as California legal requirements. So I want to emphasize this independent balancing act. Next slide, please. We would ask you to consider RAFTELUS for two main reasons. This slide shows the first reason we would ask you to consider RAFTELUS. As I mentioned previously, we have worked with dozens and dozens and dozens of California utilities, from very small utilities up through very, very large. I assisted on a study with the city of San Diego a couple of years ago. I also recently worked with the SFPUC on a study. And so we understand the California context, both Northern and Southern California. And especially, I think we understand the California context as it relates to water supplies and agencies such as yours that have water supplies that are a mix of imported water, groundwater, and banked water. So I think that there's just a lot of California experience. And I think the other thing we would like to emphasize for you is our firm is a very active participant in the American Water Works Association, particularly the American Water Works Association Rates and Charges Committee. And we have a staff member who's based in Denver, who was the former chairperson of the Rates and Charges Committee. And he is currently leading the update of Manual M1. Principles of Water Supply Practices, M1, Water Rates, Fees, and Charges. And I myself have been a contributor to the past two editions of Manual M1, the 6th and 7th edition. And I'm currently on the M1 Update Editorial Committee, reviewing all of the chapters and the changes that have been proposed for Manual M1. And so there is a really depth of experience that we hope our participation in the AWWA, and particularly the Rates and Charges Committee, might indicate to you. Next slide, please. Now, another reason we would like you to consider our firm, and we think we can be beneficial to the agency, is that we have an immense amount of strategic communications practice expertise, and we actually have a service line within the RAFTELUS umbrella of services, which is strategic communications. And what we're finding is on virtually every California rate study, there is a public outreach component. And that when you're doing studies in this state and perhaps others, not only do you need to get it right from a financial planning, cost allocation, and rate design perspective, but you need to make sure that your customers understand. You need to make sure that you have a transparent process that wins customer confidence. And our strategic communications practice specializes in that. And so when you look at your RFP associated with this project, the RFP listed various tasks that you would seek to have your selected consultant assist you with as part of the public outreach campaign. And this would be a variety of things related to website, a design, or possibly bill inserts or flyers, or possibly direct contact with customers. And there were several others. Now, one of the last things I want to note about this is that when we developed our proposal was sort of priced with our strategic communications practice really offering you a total sort of turnkey public outreach process where we would be doing everything. I think one of the things that we've realized is that what you were really asking for is assistance from Raftellus with the public outreach process as opposed to us doing everything on it. And so I just want to make sure that as you look at our pricing, we want you to know that our pricing is negotiable. And we want to make sure that we structure our pricing in a way that meets your desired scope of services. And then finally, the last item on this slide, and this is my last slide, is you may not be noticing it in my presentation tonight, but people like myself make a lot of public presentations on very complex financial planning and cost allocation and rate design issues. And we feel that at least some of us are very adept public speakers who can communicate with members of the public, or for that matter, the board, or even technical staff in a way that makes complex issues clear and concise. I believe that concludes my presentation.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Any questions?
All right. Do we do the questions now or public comment first?
You're going to ask John if you have any questions for him based on the proposal, and then you'll discuss it after the second
interview.
Sorry, public comment at the very end after both?
After both, yes.
I just want to make sure everybody understands it. So I didn't want to voice a wrong opinion here. So with that, should we have questions from the board members? You want to go first, Kathy?
So I have a few. So if anybody wants to go ahead of me in case maybe we have duplicates, I'm happy to do that. Or if you just want me to go, I'll go.
Just go.
Okay. You want me to do them all or just kind of one and then pass it on?
Let me ask the other board members, how many do you have various questions? Two or three? That's all. Okay, go for it, Kathy.
Okay. Thank you. First of all, thank you for your presentation. Appreciate it. And thank you for your thorough proposal. Thank you for submitting a proposal. And I just want to say I appreciated at the very beginning of your proposal packet the diversity and inclusion statement as part of your core values. I thought that was interesting and I appreciated that. Okay. One thing I did not see in the written proposal was what the sections of your reports are typically. So if you could share that. Do you want me to just throw out all my questions or one at a time?
However the board chair would prefer, I'm fine either way.
One at a time.
Okay, one at a time. So we'll start with that. Can you just tell us what the structure of your report to the board, the sections of your report to the board?
Sure. I think in the context of the ratepayer advocate report, what you would see, number one, is background information on this agency and how this agency was formed by the merger of Castaic Lakes Santa Clarita Division and Valencia Water Company and Newhall Water District. And I realize that that may seem a little bit redundant because that exact same information will be in staff's report. Nonetheless, I think for members of the public that read the ratepayer advocate report, that having that information shown to them in our report will be a very, very helpful thing for them to understand the context. And that section of the report will discuss the Senate bill requirement for the ratepayer advocate. And I think it will also discuss key elements of your operations. And I think that to me, the one really major element of your operations are your water supplies and how you provide water to your customers in your service territory. Because I think it is a really interesting mix of imported groundwater and banked water. After that introductory section, I believe what we would do is we would provide readers with our understanding of how a rate study is completed and what the key elements of the rate study are. And once again, this may be slightly redundant with staff's report, but we would talk about the importance of financial planning to ensure agency financial viability and long-term sustainability. And we would talk about how the financial planning process develops the revenue that revenue requirement, the amount of revenue that must be recovered from ratepayers. And then we would talk about what the cost of service process is and how it takes that revenue requirement and it allocates costs between, for example, fixed and variable components. And then we would finally talk about the rate design process, the development of fixed and variable rates that recover the correct amount of revenue. And I think that that whole discussion of the rate study process would also feature a discussion of Proposition 218. Now, Raftellis is not a law firm. We definitely don't practice law, but we've done dozens and dozens and dozens of rate studies that have been prepared by us in compliance with the requirements of Proposition 218 and reviewed by attorneys, both internal and external of our clients. And I think it'll be really important to note in the report how all of this is done in the Proposition 218 context. Having laid the foundation with those first two sections, I believe that what the report will do is, number one, is it will discuss the assumptions and data that were used by staff in the development of their proposed financial plan. And critical issues associated with that will be how staff developed its demand forecasts and what the assumptions were regarding things like per capita per day indoor water usage and whether that complies with current and projected future California standards and what the assumptions were regarding the impact of conservation on long-term demand by various types of customers and what the assumptions were regarding outdoor irrigation demand. And the reason that's so important is those demand forecasting assumptions form the basis for the financial plan, the projection of revenues, and also to some degree, the projection of costs, depending on your water supply components. And so there would be a discussion of financial planning assumptions and methodologies. The next section of the report, which we're up to number four, would be the same thing associated with cost allocations and how staff allocated costs, for example, to various functions, whether that's supply, treatment, pumping, storage, distribution, customer service, and also how staff allocated costs to factors like base demand, max day demand, max hour demand, fire protection, and also customer service. And a discussion of the assumptions that staff used to allocate costs and the exact methodologies they used to allocate costs and whether from the Raftellis perspective, we felt that those allocation procedures were normative compared to industry standards and also in compliance with the intent of Prop 218. And then I think you would see two other sections of the report. I might be up to number 4 or 5 now. I'm losing track. The next section would be a discussion of rate design and how staff developed their rates. And I think a really interesting question associated with rate design is to what extent that rates that are being proposed by staff, however staff elects to structure those rates, and right now you have a uniform commodity rate, are correlated to the way customers use water across your sort of 3 major service components, you know, the entities that form the agency, and how rates were developed, what your current percentage of fixed versus volumetric revenue recovery is, what the proposed percentage of fixed versus volumetric recovery is, because that's a critical component of utility financial stability. And then finally, the last section, I believe, is a real deep dive into customer bill impacts associated with what staff is proposing. And I think that our firm feels very, very strongly that it's not enough just to show typical bill impacts, you know, a customer that uses, I don't know, whatever it is on your system, let's just say 15 HCF a month. We want to show bill impacts across a wide variety of customer classes, or let me say land use types, commercial, residential, multifamily, institutional. And we also want to show bill impacts across a wide distribution of usage associated with each one of those land use types. We think that's really important because it makes it fully transparent to your customers. And it also allows the board to understand how the decisions you make regarding staff's proposed rates will impact your customers. I feel kind of exhausted, like blabbing too much. That's about all I can think of right now.
Folks, I just want to give us a timestamp here. We have about less than 9 minutes slotted for the rest of this interview.
So I was going to say, my opinion is we should treat everyone equally. So if this is going to run over, we need to delay the next person so that both people get the same amount of time.
Because I think
there's more questions coming.
I will be very brief. I apologize for going on so long.
So we're just saying that we're going to extend the time for both groups, right? Just to be equal and fair. That's what you're suggesting.
Well, we're going to try to speed it up, but yeah. Yes.
Okay.
If it's 45 minutes each instead of 30.
If that's the case, we should let the others know not to jump on the call until those 15 minutes are left. I can send an email, Rochelle. So we want to say 6:15 or?
Yeah, because 6:20? We haven't got to all the questions yet.
6:15, 6:20?
I say we try for 6:15. I mean, I'm not the chair.
Great. 6:15, I'll tell them 6:15.
Move it quickly.
Okay. All right, sorry, I'll try to go faster. So in the response to the last question, I can tell that you've done some homework on the agency. And I'm wondering if you would add to that list any other factors that you feel that our agency in particular is dealing with that would play into case studies that may be a little different from others.
No. And the reason I say no is because every agency that we work with, it seems, is dealing with PFAS and what the capital cost ramifications and the O&M cost ramifications are of PFAS. And also every agency we work with is dealing with the fundamental financial planning question of how they should use debt. And how much of their CIP should be financed by PAYGO, pay-as-you-go, right, payer-funded capital, versus how much should be funded by external debt financing. Now, I do think the fascinating question that staff may or may not wish to investigate is whether it's appropriate to continue to have a uniform commodity rate for your potable water service, as opposed to possibly considering a tiered rate structure. But I don't want to offer any opinions on that because we see our role as assisting staff, not saying you got to do this or that.
Okay, thank you. And then, I feel very strongly about having a ratepayer advocate for our customers. Can you speak to the value of ratepayer advocates offering the public, in particular ratepayers, your service and how you create opportunities for dialogue with the public and welcome it?
I think that I think that we see real value in the ratepayer advocate role. And in many of the rate studies we conduct, even though we might not officially be nominated as a ratepayer advocate or referred to as a ratepayer advocate, we're very frequently making presentations to stakeholders, especially in citizens advisory type committee formats, where we present to stakeholders what staff has developed with the assistance of our firm and try to help stakeholders understand what decisions were made and why they were made and how those decisions impact the financial viability of the utility, but also how they impact the customer base in terms of the rates they pay and the bills they have. And so I think what's critically important about that Citizens Advisory Committee process or this ratepayer advocate process is transparency and providing customers with information that they can help understand or that they can understand and building support for what you are doing or what any agency is doing. It's a way for your customers to gain confidence in you, their supplier of this critical resource, and not feel like they're into the dark and you're imposing on them stuff that they don't get and they feel is too expensive.
Okay, thank you. And then last one is, have any of your rate case studies ever been challenged? And if so, how was that handled?
I've been with RefTelus 14 years. I've never been aware of a challenge to any of our rate study work. I have been aware of utilities hiring our firm to help them with litigation after they were challenged. And what they would be challenged on is the work of another consultant. And so my honest answer to you is I am unsure of anybody that has sued one of our clients under Prop 218 currently. And this is, I promise I'll make this brief. This is a really key point, and it relates to one of the early slides. When we write rate study reports, they're incredibly detailed, okay? And they're incredibly detailed because we want to provide that extremely detailed, transparent administrative record. And I think to some degree, if you're upset about water rates or sewer rates that are being charged, and you're interested in possibly filing suit under Prop 218, it kind of cuts the wind out of your sails when there's a rate study report that is 100% honest and transparent and detailed, because what it shows is why things were done the way they were to come up with the proposed rates. And this notion of a detailed administrative record is something we really take pride in doing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Director Colley, you want to go? Yeah, why don't you go, Director Colley? No, okay.
You go.
Okay, Vice President.
Really quickly, I know I've heard the RefTelus name. I'm actually looking at Ms. Patterson. What did they do more recently than was in here? Because it was 2021, but I've seen the name very recently.
Yeah, they helped us with the standby charge for the Tesoro properties, but it wasn't water rates.
Right, but that you've been involved in more recent years, because I know I've seen the name, was my question. The pricing, is it a lump sum or is it time and materials not to exceed?
Time and materials not to exceed.
Okay, so if we do half of what you expected or, you know, less than what was budgeted, it will be done at the hourly rates.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. I appreciated your comments on interaction and outreach to ratepayers, because I think myself and Director Colley were the ones that were here when this process came about. And I guess my commentary / question would be, you talked about independence. Independence is because this position was hired to advise the board on whether what the staff is doing makes sense and is consistent with industry best practices, and to be a resource to the public and some people don't call businesses public, but I do, you know, other rate payers to be a resource to them. So if they call and need a sit down for their HOA or their land use planning team as to what these rates mean during a rate setting process, the ratepayer advocate is there to help them, not just the staff. And that sounds like that's your understanding.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, that's what I view this report and expect. So I appreciate that you went through the report contents, because I would look for comments on, you know, is this the best we can do? Is this standard? Is there other things that we might consider? Does the staff want a certain thing for a certain reason, but maybe three other agencies have done it differently, and here's why, and your professional opinion as to which way the board should go if it is different than what staff is doing. So I heard all of that in your talk, so I appreciate hearing that, and that concludes my comments.
So first, hopefully really quick, the write-up doesn't make it really clear, this $10 per hour technology charge. There's a sentence here that expenses include a $10 per hour technology card charge. I'm trying to figure out if the numbers in the chart, like $320 an hour for, Angie, includes the $10 an hour, or is it actually $330 an hour for her services?
Actually $10 per hour for every consulting hour. So if Angie is listed there as 320, in reality, it's 330.
Okay. So, and then I'm assuming that, and so this is a pretty pointed question. I'm assuming you've also seen the competitor's submittal. I would assume that's a public document and you'd be kind of crazy not to look at it.
Well, actually, sir, I may be admitting to being crazy, because I did not look at our competitor's proposal. Of course, I did read their ratepayer advocate report for staff's last rate study. I also looked at the memo they wrote in September of last year regarding facility capacity fees. But I did not look at their proposal.
Okay. Well, then I think it's public information, so I don't think I'm giving you anything that's inappropriate. The bulk of the work that your firm proposes to do gets billed at $320 an hour. The bulk of the work that they would propose to have folks do is at $200 an hour. So your firm is 60% higher for the primary employees will be doing the work. The question I've got is, how can I justify paying 60% more for work that is presumably going to be similar?
Understood. And I can't comment on our competitor's $200 per hour. What I will say to you is that our firm did not picture this project as being a project in which we would have newer rate consultants with only 2 or 3 or 5 years experience who might be billed at 200 participating in the project. We see this project as being a project that requires the intellectual expertise of highly experienced senior personnel, such as my staff, who've been doing this sort of stuff for 2 or 3 decades and who have a lot of industry credentials, as opposed to employing someone who may be very talented, who's got an MBA or a master's degree in economics, who's been building models for Raftellus for 3 years, but doesn't have the seasoning to say to staff, you know, the way you're forecasting demand is non-normative, or the way you've allocated costs between fixed and variable is non-normative. And we know that because we wrote the chapter on cost allocations in AWWA manual M1. And so the staff you're getting in our proposal is really experienced staff. And I have to admit, we have really high hourly billing rates.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you all. Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Did you?
Oh. I'm going to, I'll just thank you for your time here, Mr. Wright. And I would just say that I am familiar with the Raftellis Group, as they've been in the industry, as you've said, for many, many years. So with that, the questions that were asked by the board members here kind of answered mine already. So with that, I appreciate your time and effort to come here and do the proposal.
Thank you very much for having us. Yes. We appreciate being interviewed.
All right.
Now you have 8 minutes.
Okay, good.
But no discussion.
No discussion?
No discussion.
Okay.
You can get water.
Yeah. I don't have any public comment at this time. Oh, both of them. Okay. Well, I don't have one right now either.
Don't eat sugar. You've been talking to
Well, good evening to the SCV Water Committee here, as well as Erica and others. We have everyone here from RDN, myself, Anthony, and Ichiko. So we're all set to go once the committee's ready.
Yes, Jack, you may proceed. Thank you.
Okay, excellent. Well, good evening, and thanks everyone for taking the time to meet with us. We recognize that you have options in selecting your next ratepayer advocate, and we are honored to be considered for this important role. My name is Jack Lyon. I'm a director at RDN, and I'm our authorized representative for this opportunity. Can we go to the next slide, please? So our slide deck is intentionally very brief and short here. We just want to present our project team and then give you a few key points on why we think we're qualified to support you. And hopefully that leaves plenty of time for your questions for us. So this slide presents our proposed project team. Our managing director, Dr. Bob Niehaus, will serve as your project director, and he will ensure a successful project just like we've had over the past few years. Bob is well-seasoned, over 40 years of industry experience. With me today, we have Anthony Ilusky. He will serve as your ratepayer advocate and project manager. And our clients really love working with Anthony because he is very responsive, and he also has a keen ability to think outside the box. He likes to deliver alternative recommendations and solutions that some don't always think about, that are, you know, cookie cutter per se. So Anthony's really a great asset when reviewing other consultants' work or staff's work to think what else is on the table here? What else can we come up with as a viable option? Ichiko Kido is also with us, and she will serve as our backup ratepayer advocate. We like the idea of presenting two ratepayer advocates just in case Anthony may not be available. You know, sometimes committee meetings or board meetings may shift. So it's always nice to have someone who is abreast of everything that's going throughout a study and can pitch hit when needed. Although we don't, you know, anticipate changing Tony out of this role. Ichiko did previously assist you all from about 2019 to 2022. In the same function as the ratepayer advocate. She was really instrumental in supporting you all with the water rate study for your retail customers. And Ichiko brings more than 15 years of industry experience. And then we also have two economists on our team. And they're here primarily to support us with developing interactive tools that will be customer facing, especially for water rates. So we believe that one key value add that we offer is the ability to create tools that will support your customers and your ratepayers to see how they will be impacted by proposed changes. So for instance, when we supported the agency back in 2021 with water rates, Bjorn created an interactive tool, a water rate calculator that is currently hosted on your website, that customers can use to really review how the rates are going to be moving forward based on changing assumptions. And we're proposing to update that again, and Anthony will dive into that. In addition, we also have a deep bench of staff here based in Santa Barbara. We're a firm of 20 folks here in California. So if you need additional support, we certainly have it. And with that, I'll turn it over to Anthony and our next slide.
Am I unmuted now? I believe somebody was muting me, the host. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we had a little bit of background noise, so we're all good now. Thank you.
Oh, sorry about that. That might be my heater kicking on. It's a little cold and rainy here in Santa Barbara today. So, well, thank you, Jack. And thanks for staff and finance committee inviting us to interview. We're really excited to be here, and we hope that we can continue our partnership with SCV Water. Again, as Jack mentioned, I'm Anthony. I'm going to be the ratepayer advocate and project manager. And I'm going to go through these bullet points and the reasons we believe that we are very qualified to continue this work with you. First off, we're experienced. We've been working with SCV Water since 2019. And over that time, Ichiko and I have worked with agency staff, consultants, and of course the board and customers. We really strive to help the agency implement fair and equitable water rates, wholesale water rates, and capacity fees. And in addition to the work that we've done with SCV Water, we've performed a similar role for Molten Niguel Water District. We've did independent rate reviews and cost of service reviews and reviews of their fee structure in 2017 and again in 2022. Secondly, we have two ratepayer advocates available, which Jack mentioned. Having the backup will really help us be available at any time for customers and for board meetings to answer any other ratepayer questions. And additionally, as you mentioned, our support staff of economists is there to confirm that any of our recommendations have a firm basis in economic principles. Third, we're very committed to providing the impartial and independent assessment to any of the proposed rates and fees. You have a great finance team. We love working with Rochelle and Doreen, and we have a great working relationship. But having been in this role for the last few years, we understand that the most important part of our job is to be unbiased and independent. For example, we recently completed the Valencia Regional Capacity Fee Study, which was worked on by another consultant. And in the beginning of that study, we were able to identify quite a few areas that needed improvement. One specific area was the debt service was not incorporated into the overall fee design. So in order to mitigate any potential legal issues that could be happen if that was implemented, we recommended that that fee design was updated to incorporate debt service. And then overall, it was agreed that this would improve the customer equity between us, the consultant, and staff. So we were able to come to a consensus on that. Finally, we also have a track record of effective customer and board engagement. We attend all the rate and fee meetings and workshops. When we supported the study in 2021, you might remember that we were very active with customers. For those of you that were here, I can't exactly see who's all in the back panel back there because it's a little, you're a little small on my screen. But Ichiko is there to answer all of the board questions, all customer questions. We took calls from customers. We took emails. We especially are proud that Ichiko responded to every question and actually called and emailed customers back to make sure that they understood the answers that she was giving. On top of that, we also did the FAQ that's on the agency's website that answered all of the most common ratepayer questions that we encountered. And then our reports and memos explain the rates in the most simple and succinct way that we could come up with that would increase customer understanding. For retail water rates, we also developed two customer-facing tools, which I believe Jack mentioned the rate calculator. But I don't, if you'll remember from the previous report and the meetings, again, for those of you who are involved in the study at that time, we did do these yearly and monthly bill impacts, which looked at the impact of all different types of users, real customers, and also hypothetical customers. And we were able to illustrate the impact of new rates on all those different types of customers. So if you could go to the next slide, please. This is the screenshot of the rate calculator that's currently on your website. We developed this during the last rate study process. And customers can put in a variety of usage levels, what size meter they have, which division, which was important at the time because we were bringing all three divisions together into one uniform rate structure. And again, if we continue to serve as your ratepayer advocate, we'll produce this tool, update it, and create any new tools that are needed for outreach at the time when it becomes important to do that additional outreach. And again, we decided to keep this as brief as possible so we could answer your questions. You'd let us know what's important to you. So I'd like to open it up to whatever questions you have.
Thank you. We'll start with Director Arbitrage. With her questions.
Thank you. So I'm going to ask the same questions I did last round, just in fairness, except I'll skip the first one because in your report, you did outline, in your written report, you did outline the report sections and the corresponding contents, which I appreciated. So I don't need to ask you about that. So my first question is, you are aware of, having worked with us, you are aware of kind of the factors that may be quote unquote unique to this agency. But do you want to speak to any of those in terms of what you kind of consider to be key factors or maybe a little bit different factors that are specific to our agency that plays into or would play into future case rate case studies?
Sure. Thank you very much. That's a great question. I mean, specifically when we previously had done the rate study, I mentioned that there was multiple agencies that were being combined into one. There are still some residuals of that. There's still some of that outstanding legacy debt that we know about. And additionally, there's many different areas that sort of encompass some more populated, more densely populated, some a little more thinly populated in the service area. And that can impact the different ways that rates are designed, specifically if there's some customers with very large area parcels. And I know we'd spoken briefly about water budget rates, but that was not necessarily going to be a major component of this study. But we may want to look at the different types of customers that are across the service area here, because it is quite a large service area and very kind of heterogeneous in its makeup.
Thank you. So I am one of the board members who feels very strongly about having a ratepayer advocate. I think it plays a very important role for our ratepayers. Can you just speak to the value of having a ratepayer advocate for a public agency and how you ensure that the public has access to you if they have questions and how you welcome their interaction?
Sure. That's a good question also, but it's like a twofold answer a little bit. First off, it's having somebody available that can look at the concerns of ratepayers and sort of have an independent eye on all of the work that's happening. Oftentimes potentially the board or staff can get a tunnel vision, like looking at a specific type of rate structure or customer that they want to most affect. And so we give that independent eye and the way to look at the differences between those customers. Additionally, I think there's a customer outreach aspect to this that's very, very important. And again, I want to cite sort of the previous rate study when we worked with you, that doing this customer outreach as far as communicating directly with customers whenever any kind of questions arose, being there to answer emails and any other sort of questions from customers in general, I think has a really huge advantage to communicating the reasons that rates need to be changed and how those impacts are going to affect different people. Ichiko, did you have any other insights from the previous study?
Yeah, I do remember we had a link on your website where customers can ask questions, and that is, you know, along with letting them know, inform them that link is available to the customers, and any questions that come to us through that link, we made sure to answer any questions that they had. And complicated ones, I personally approached them and made a phone call and had a conversation. That worked well.
Okay, thank you. And then my last question is, so I know from having worked together, my general question is, have any of your rate case studies been challenged? And I wanted to kind of preface that by saying, I know with the Valencia retail capacity fee study that we recently ran through, there was some concerns that were raised and we had to work through those. Aside from that, and with specific to other agencies, have you had any of your rate case studies challenged?
I mean, every rate study is potentially challenging. You're going to have people that have more impact or see any sort of rate adjustment as not something that they do not want to happen within their jurisdiction necessarily. So many of the challenges can be from city councils or from boards of directors. But I think the most important thing is that working through those challenges rather than fighting directly or not being able to sort of change direction on those. I think it's one of our main, our best features is that we're able to work directly. We know the constituency, especially in this agency, and we're able to look at those problems, address them, and bring a final resolution that everybody is happy with. I'm trying to think of one specific problem that they're like when you say challenged, I think more of like a legal challenge.
Yeah, I think, yes. Tony, just to clarify, I think they might be asking, have we been challenged like from a sense of Prop 218 challenge? And to answer that question very directly, no, the answer is no. We have not faced any legal issues with rates or fees that we have designed or recommended. And we're very proud of that fact, that we have zero challenges to our rates and fees. With that said, our team has been brought on to actually support agencies when there has been a challenge previously. So when a previous consultant had conducted a rate or fee study, and then there was issues with that, and then they brought on a new consultant, a competitive RFP, we come in a couple of those situations, and we're the follow-on contractor. And of course, we're very careful to ensure that everything was compliant with industry standards, legal requirements in California, especially Proposition 218. Please let us know if that answers your question or if you were thinking about something different there.
No, that does answer my question. I appreciate that. So those are all my questions. Thank you very much for serving as our ratepayer advocate for the last few years. And thank you for submitting your proposal. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Vice President Cusack.
Yeah, thank you. Just a couple questions. So please clarify, I'm looking at Ms. Patterson again, the Valencia rate study, did RDN didn't write it. They advised us
on the capacity fee study?
The one that we just passed for
the Valencia retail capacity study? No, it was another consultant who wrote the report, and RDN was the ratepayer advocate, our ratepayer advocate, who reviewed the study.
Okay, yeah, I think that was a little confusing, you know, and talking about even the prior person, you talk about what the report looks like. They're not preparing the rate report. They're commenting on the rate report, which is a little different. I remember that they were commenting on areas of improvement, which is what we want from a ratepayer advocate. And then I also appreciated the commentary about the personal outreach and the calls. I will say I don't remember, and you know, it's a long time ago from the original rate study, and I remember working with Ichiko, if I'm saying your name correctly. Did we have proactive meetings then? And would it be included? You know, I see here like the meetings listed as just the Prop 218 hearing. Did we offer a meeting for the public to come outside of that? Or was that basically it? You know, do we offer, let's just say the Chamber of Commerce really wanted to have a meeting. Is that in the scope to do meetings besides the 218 hearing?
Well, they can answer other meetings, but they were involved in the Finance Administration Committee meetings. So those public meetings, we had a workshop
open to the public
level that was the board was invited to. We didn't go outside of the agency to perform any workshops. We weren't asked to do that, but they can say if it's included in
there. Yeah, proposal. Like if someone requested it, or if we had a lot of, you know, outcry or something, or it was deemed important to have additional meetings, would that be included in the scope?
Yeah, I can just briefly say yes. We did propose, I believe, 12 total meetings. Mm-hmm. The Proposition 218 is usually the culmination of all of those preparatory meetings. Mm-hmm. And generally, I think in the previous study, most of the other additional meetings were with the board. Mm-hmm. And for the fee studies, I know that the business community was involved in quite a few of those meetings. Mm-hmm. But we'd be happy to go directly to the public and sort of workshops or outreach meetings as well. Any way that those would be most beneficial. And we'll identify what the best, most beneficial approach will be as the study moves forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. And Darian reminded me in 2021, we were doing the retail rates. It was during COVID. So all of our meetings were virtual. Yeah.
Right. And then one additional thing I'd like to add to Tony's great answer there is that I think a lot of it depends on the direction that staff, and if you use a consultant to conduct the next water rate study, what the proposed potential rate alternatives are. So if you continue in a row that's very similar to what you currently have, then there might not need to be as much customer engagement because they already stand the basic rate structure that you have. Mm-hmm. However, if you decide to go a different route and, for example, introduce new tiers, a tier-based rate structure, that's where you want to get a little bit more involved with customers to ensure that they understand why it's needed and how it will impact them individually. So, you know, if needed, as Tony mentioned, we would be very happy to support additional outreach. But I think a lot of it is contingent upon what are staff, what's the board, what's a potential consultant that will support you on the rate study? What's kind of the consensus moving forward of what the agency would like to see implemented? And we'll kind of base kind of what we're going off of there based on how we want to tackle customer outreach and support you in additional ways there.
Okay, thank you.
Director Colley, do you have any questions?
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. So my question is for Tony specifically. I'm looking at your resume, Tony, and it looks to me like you have about 5 years of experience in this area, and your master's degree is anthropology. I'm wondering if you could comment on your experience and perhaps even how your education prepared you for this kind of a role.
Sure, absolutely. But first off, let me mention that we have a really great support staff at RDN. We have a lot of people that have economics background, that have finance backgrounds. I'm more to facilitate and manage and look at the process as it's happening. I have been working with the rate studies between 5 and 7 years approximately. I can't remember exactly when I very first started working with these. But the interesting part about a degree in anthropology is that it's very holistic in its approach. So specifically for the ratepayer advocate position, I look, as with my educational background, specifically at different populations and how different sorts of impacts happen based on outside stimulus. So in the case of a ratepayer advocate, I'm able to look at sort of a holistic view of how rates are going to potentially impact different types of users. Not reflected in the resume that you got, because that was based on sort of this current looking at water rates and utility rates in general. My previous employment was management, was logistics management. So I do have quite a few more years of experience managing teams and working with groups of different type of people. So I believe that actually applies directly to the ratepayer advocate position, ability to see many different viewpoints.
So help me understand. I sort of took the first part of your answer to suggest that you'd be somewhat of a gatekeeper, allocating work to others in your firm. I'm trying to figure out how that would correspond to the cost structure that we got. Can you help me understand how that would work? Because the number of hours projected to be worked looked like you had the greatest number of hours. Would those hours really be hours that you would have then, as gatekeeper, gotten a better, you know, somebody who's better able to answer or review specific parts, or how do you view that working?
Sure. A significant part of the ratepayer advocate work is the outreach. Many of those hours will be designing and looking at outreach opportunities and ways that impacts happen to different types of customers. I do rely on the economists specifically if there's an economics problem, such as long-term financial projection based on customer growth, something that has economics in the background. But the primary work of report writing, scenario building, scenario review, that does rest on my shoulders. I'm ultimately the one that's responsible for all of the analysis and the end products.
All right. Thank you.
Erica, how much time we have left with this these candidates?
Just under 10 minutes left, slotted.
You can ask one question, though. Well, when I looked at your slide, your slides indicated work with Moulton-Niguel Water District presently. I'm just let me give you a background. I am actually familiar with somewhat of the history of Moulton-Niguel Water District. And I'm just curious how they're doing these days. What's the biggest challenge that they have in their water rates?
Ichiko worked a little bit more closely with them in 2017. I'll let her take the first stab at that if you don't mind, and then I'll fill in the blanks with more recent information.
Moulton-Niguel Water District is financially sound. They have a large pool of reserves, and they're, you know, fairly doing well. Our job was to check their giant, intense spreadsheet to make sure that there is absolutely no mistakes there. I would say their biggest challenge, at least in my eyes, was that how to allocate some of their accumulated reserve money, using that reserve money and, you know, apply to the revenue requirements and how they, you know, justify the use of the reserve money. And, you know, they did a really good job explaining that in a board meeting and customer outreach. And, you know, we were comfortable backing up, you know, how they approached that process.
And I still think Orange County-wise, the main problem across Orange County is water supply. So when we worked with them in 2022, there was still, we were right in the middle of the drought still. So that's been alleviated a little bit in the last couple of years. But securing water supply and then having a rate structure that reflected that appropriate water use, that was one of their main concerns when we worked with them in the most recent study.
So do you consider that work at like a ours, or is it more of a consulting on their way they finance their water rates?
I missed the first part of the question. I'm sorry.
You said it was more similar to a ratepayer advocate consulting work. Is that correct?
Yes. We were doing outside review of their rate structure and of their models. And also developing a report that summarized any recommendations that we had for changes they should make to their rate design or their financial planning overall.
All right.
So we weren't involved with the direct creation of their rates.
All right. Thank you for submitting your proposal this time around for a ratepayer advocate. I appreciate all the work and your effort to do that and the time you've taken tonight to answer our questions and do a presentation. So with that, I'm gonna stop the interview process and go into a public comment time. Do we have any public comment?
I do not have any public comment at this time.
All right. So with that, we can now discuss the next action.
you just, is there just a recommendation you just discuss? Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I don't think so.
No.
It's a public meeting. Yeah.
It's public.
Yeah.
But they, on my thought, is they're not going to comment as a member of the public anymore.
Mm-hmm. Vice President Gutzeit, do you want to start out with the question?
Well, first, I wanted to ask staff their thoughts on the two proposals and, if there's a, if you're leaning one way or the other. Yeah.
I was already asked this question. we already have a familiarity with RDN. We're very comfortable working with them. Our rate model was their rate model. We feel like we're really comfortable. We've never had any issues with asking questions and not getting a responsive answer. I don't know Ralph Tellis, but we will work with whoever, the board wants us to work with. But knowing that we've had a really positive relationship working with RDN.
Okay. And then like follow-up question on that. Do you feel like there was any, I was there for, I think a little bit, if not all of it, is the facility capacity fees, which was the developer. I know you have different names, so I'm still struggling with this. You have different names than I'm used to. With the developers, do you feel that outreach process went well? I mean, I know it was some periods of being heated and then not, but do you feel like, frankly, RDN did effective outreach, or were you having to get involved as well, or were they handling, disgruntled stakeholders?
Well, for the capacity fees, there weren't many stakeholders, mm-hmm. As we know. They were part of our meetings when we had internal staff meetings, when the consultant and the ratepayer advocate, along with the stakeholders, were on a call. So they were engaged in the process. Mm-hmm. I don't believe it was asked that they have a one-on-one conversation with any of the stakeholders, mm-hmm. other than the meetings that we had where they provided input.
Okay. But you didn't hear anybody say, gee, I called your ratepayer advocate and they didn't talk to me or any of that. Okay. All right. And then I guess just my initial observations, I would say, I was interested to hear Ref Tellis's emphasis on broad knowledge of rate structures on the AWWA side. Frankly, RDN being local, I would have liked to see some in-person person come from Santa Barbara. That's just me. I'm over COVID. I'm over hybrid, especially if you're based nearby. I mean, if you're flying in from New York, that might be a different thing, but I would have liked to see an in-person presentation. To the Director Colley asked some really good questions about cost. I actually think RDN's costs are low, I think, for consult. I mean, compared to engineering rates and things like that, their costs are low, but if you look at the cost difference between what was proposed, $25,000 of that is outreach differential. So $10,000 in outreach from RDN versus $33,000. Maybe I'm not doing the math right, but Raftel's had much more outreach. So, take that away. It really narrows the gap in price differential. So I guess that's about it. I value staff's opinion, but I also found the presentation from Ralph Tellis to be more what I would like.
Director Colley.
So I will reiterate my desire to do away with this entirely. Were it up to me, we would have no ratepayer advocate. And I think the presentations tonight helped to support my point of view. If you listen to the proposals, really, they are proposing to be a rate consultant, and we will hire somebody else to the rate consultant work, and we, the board, are tasked really with being the advocates for those people who have elected us. There is nothing that any ratepayer advocate has done so far that I can tell that has actually saved the ratepayers a single dime. It just hasn't happened. We've rearranged some things and collected money from different places, but in the end, the amount of money that we spend, and therefore the amount of money we have to collect, has never been reduced by this process at all. I would note that this term ratepayer advocate, as far as I know, kind of stems from the Public Utilities Commission, which has an office of ratepayer advocate. And there, those folks, in large part, are tasked with trying to allocate costs between those who will profit from the utilities operation, the stockholders and the like, and trying to make sure that the profits are not excessive. We don't profit anything ever. And the amount of money that we collect will always have to equal the amount of money we spend. And so if a ratepayer advocate actually existed to help our ratepayers, that ratepayer advocate would try to figure out ways to reduce the amount of money we spend. But that there's never been a proposal along those lines. So I reiterate my concern with the process to begin with. Since I think tonight I'm being tasked with choosing between the two, I would prefer RDN. That's with some pretty significant reservations. I certainly heard Rotellus suggest that the excess cost, having 60% higher rates for those people who would do the bulk of the work, can at least in part be attributed to much more experience in this field. I note that RDN intends, Ichiko's resume tells me that she has 30 years of experience in utility financial planning. Anthony's resume, I can sort of guess from the resume that he's got around 5 years of relevant experience. And so certainly they're on paper, the resumes look like we are getting somebody with less experience and therefore somebody who typically would command a lower rate in the market. But I agree that $200 an hour, as opposed to what's actually $330, not $320 an hour, is much better. And it probably does not take somebody with decades of experience to assist us as a ratepayer advocate in the role that we actually are asking that to be done. So my vote right now is to be, if we're going to employ either, is deploy RDN.
Thank you. Director Armitage.
Thank you. So I'm on the other side of the pendulum, right? I've appreciated that we are continuing to offer the independent second opinion of a ratepayer advocate being made available to the board and to the public whenever rates are being recalculated. So I kind of use a scoring system as I read through the packet and as I listened to the presentations to help me decide, because I think there is some strengths on both sides, but I wanted to try to be as fair as possible. So I have Raff Tillis as having just a little bit more in the scoring points. And I think to me, the key difference is that the resumes and the qualifications of Raff Tillis seem to be a little stronger, as you mentioned, Director Colley. I see some more, a stronger background in finance, economics, and accounting on that team. I know the costs were higher for Raff Tillis. And I also did hear Mr. Wright mention that in what they offered was the turnkey communication plan, which we may need because which we may not need because we have such a strong communication team here at the agency. So I'm wondering if we ultimately go with them, if there can be some negotiation, maybe in the costs related to outreach, knowing what our team is capable of and what they've done in the past. So I guess that would be my recommendation. Thank you.
So I understand it's Raff Tillis for you. Okay. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure I didn't hear that wrong. Before I ask for the complete roll call, not a roll call, but a kind of a consensus of what we're doing. Both consultants do a great job, I think, of understanding what rates are and how and the economics of rates. I've seen Needhouse at work 20 years ago for the water districts in South Orange County, and I've always been very impressed with their staff at that time and today too, and their work with the agency. But I too have had a lot of experience with Raff Tillis, and they bring an experience that's probably more nationwide, if you want to call it that, from experience wise. So I'm really ambivalent about it. So with that, I'm going to ask the one that didn't really say, well, Vice President Gutzeit, which one do you prefer?
Right. I wasn't sure if I was. Yeah, if I had decided, but actually, if pressed to make a decision, I would say I would go with Raff Tillis. And I'll tell you why. It has to do with Director Colley's questioning why we need this. And, you know, going back to why I thought this was a good idea when we added the ratepayer advocate is because I sat through meetings and I saw at the time, you know, some directors that are no longer here questioning the methodology, not questioning in a bad way, but just uncertain as to the methodology of where things came from, where rate assumptions came from, and whether that was proper or not. And they wanted a second opinion besides staff because, you know, directors are really kind of put on the line, you know, put on the line or put on the spot to ask customers to pay more. And I think we really want to know for sure that this is standard industry practice, that this is the best we can do, that nobody else is doing it different. That's why I thought a ratepayer advocate was a good idea. And I thought Raff Tillis's presentation was stronger on that side. So I will though say that I thought RDN, that's why I asked if they did the proposal or they did the commentary on the Valencia rate issue, because I thought they found some really good things. Ms. Patterson talked about, did they save the customers money? Talked about them or taking debt out of the equation. And then I know when people started, or the proponents, primary proponents, started to raise concerns, RDN had some more comments as to how the rate study was done, what they would do different. So I thought, you know, when pressed, they really showed the flexibility, which I would expect us to always have, to be open-minded, but flexibility and acknowledgement of what standard practice is and what is best to protect the agency as well. So RDN did a good job with that. But if, you know, if I have to pick, I would between the two, I would say Ralph Tellis.
Can I chime in?
Please, Director Collin.
So I acknowledge that there's probably an advantage of having somebody with decades of experience serving in the role as opposed to somebody who's had 5 to 7 years of experience in a similar role. But the fact of the matter is that we're faced, if you look at the number of hours proposed by RDN and the number of total hours proposed by Ralph Tellis, RDN proposed to work more hours and at a lower rate, yielding a substantially lower end cost. So again, I'm going to go back to the individuals that are scheduled or proposed to spend most of the time or the greatest number of hours. And Ralph Tellis proposes to charge us $330 an hour. It's annoyance to me that they kind of buried that weird $10 an hour thing in their proposal. But so it comes out to $330 an hour, which is 65% higher. You know, we can hire, you know, generally it's incumbent upon us to hire folks with adequate knowledge and experience to do a job as opposed to the absolute most expensive person to do a job, particularly a job that doesn't require that decades of experience and skill. So, you know, my encouraging this committee to consider the lower cost alternative, which we have, you know, staff has said basically, and the committee is seemed to agree, we've gotten good work out of the firm that is the lower cost. And so rather than spend tens of thousands of dollars more of our ratepayer money, I would prefer to go with the lower cost. So that's my appeal.
Okay. Vice President Gusak, go ahead.
Really quick. Yeah, I mean, I'll just comment from my experience as a consultant. I mean, cheaper per hour isn't necessarily a good deal sometimes, or a lot of times. Sometimes people with more experience are worth the higher rate, or maybe they are worth the higher rate. I could just leave it as that. And two things you said that we need to be cognizant of. And absolutely no offense to Ms. Patterson, but staff said they did good work. They work for the directors. They work for the public. So that's kind of why I asked the question about, did we have any disgruntled customers? I didn't hear of any, but if the directors feel that maybe they want the 30 years of experience, maybe they want that angle or at least to explore it. You know, this is a 3-year contract. It's not forever. You know, we need the directors. We need the public to be happy. I have no reason to think that they weren't happy, but it's not just what staff thinks. This ratepayer advocate works for the board. It works for the public and the ratepayers. So, and I mean, RDN's rates are very low for consulting costs. I think many of the finance people we see quotes from are higher. Certainly the engineering people, their rates are higher. So I don't think our RDN is high, but not out of the realm. I mean, sorry, Raftellis is higher, but not out of what I would expect for that kind of experience.
So just to get us moving on here. We are probably evenly split on this. And again, that the board as a whole will hire the consultant. So with that, I guess you don't have a recommendation from the committee. You have a consensus of both of them can do the work, and we'll take it up again at the full board discussion. Is that all right?
Can I ask what that would look like?
I think the vice president should probably first say, go ahead.
Well, I just thought, I don't know if it's possible for you to summarize pros and cons of what was expressed by the committee. But, maybe the committee, some people had this opinion, some people had that opinion. I don't know if they could, right after I said, I want everybody in person, I would think if they could be available for a brief, like 10-minute video presentation so that the board, full board, could get a flavor of, what they're offering. And then if, staff had any presentation on, I think it would be good for, let me put that first. Staff should present what we've used them for, who we used, what we used it for, what this role is, to refresh the whole board, and then let them do their 10-minute presentations and maybe a pro and con summary if you're comfortable doing that.
That's good. Go ahead, Director Colley.
Okay. Pretty much in agreement with that, other than I don't want to put staff in the position of doing a summary of what we've said. So I think that's kind of unfair to, Director Colley was an idiot. He suggested. rather than we can provide our own. But I would think it appropriate to provide a very strict timetable for the two proposers to talk to the entire board. I was tempted to think that maybe they would put in a abbreviated something in the packet so that everybody on the board wouldn't have to wade through all of what we waded through, but I guess, let them do the work as well. I would say that ask the consultants to provide a 10-minute maximum, and then I don't think that we ought to suggest a Q&A or the consultants can certainly, they will have available to them this entire recording, I think, right? They'll have at least the audio available to them in a couple of days. And I'm hearing a nod. Yeah. Seeing a nod. Yes. And so if they're smart, they will go through the entire thing, see our concerns and the arguments that we have made. And, presumably each one was smart enough to
foot stomp the things that we have said which play in their favor, and perhaps to suggest that the things that we have said otherwise or that don't play in their favor are not as important. So yeah, I would like to see a, and I think 10 minutes would be great. Just let them know that we don't anticipate a Q&A or in front of the entire board.
No. Okay. All right. Moving on to which is item 3 in your agenda package, but it's item 4 on the agenda that we're going through tonight. So this is an item to recommend approval for the general manager to enter into a contract with Exact Technology Solutions for as needed technological support services. And Mr. Perez, Director of Technology Services, gets his time in front of us.
Good evening. Should be concise compared to what we've just gone through. But good evening, Chair Peterson and Finance Administration Committee. My name, again, is Chris Perez. I'm the Director of Technology here at the agency. So we're here to request a contract award, like what Chair Peterson mentioned, for our technology services support contract. And I'd like to first start off with just right off the bat is those of you who don't know will know now that every single work process at this organization runs through a computer. Whether it's the beginning, the middle, or the end, it runs through a computer. And computer, I mean mobile computer, tablets, laptops, workstations, SCADA systems, mobile phones, et cetera, every single process. And as you all know, because some of you are business owners yourself, computers are critical to modern work. So I wanted to share that right up front. So what does the technology services support contract cover? It covers server administration, network and security management, SCADA and network management, cybersecurity, of course, and other as-needed services, business application and data management, disaster recovery and the continuity, and then special projects. So as you know, our organization, things don't sleep. I think I have a really good example that just happened over the holidays. We had an incident where we had an outage, a network issue at our treatment plant. And then in a matter of phone call, we're able to get two folks over there from our contracted services, and they worked Saturday and Sunday and got everything back up. So everything's back and running. So just FYI, this agency does not sleep. You know, some of us have day hours and other of us have 24/7 hours. So next slide, please. So the old RFP. So we're currently in the last year of a 5-year contract that was awarded back in 2019. The last support services contract, it was focused on the business network. And if you go backwards, you know, we didn't know what we didn't know. And we built and focused on kind of the foundational aspect of this organization, kind of getting everything to one. We had, you know, as if you remember, we had 3 or 4 of everything. So the focus of back in those days was the business network and getting everything situated and maintained there. And with SCADA and cybersecurity being ancillary to that. So we weren't hyper-focused on that. We're trying to kind of keep the lights on, so to speak. The original RFP was awarded at 5 years. It was a $1.62 million. So that was the original award back in 2019. But we're just like the one I'm proposing now, it was a 3-year contract with options 4 and 5. We did pursue options 4 and 5, but we were able to reduce the cost by roughly, I think, 21%. So we awarded a $1.6 million contract, but we ended up spending $1.27 million over those course of 5 years. So I wanted to share that. That was important, a factoid. So next slide, please. So the new RFP was developed through an exhaustive process. There's a lot of work put into it. It was conducted an internal needs assessment, interviews, And we use all that to develop an RFP to figure out what we needed now and going forward in the next 5 years. So the focus that came out of all that was, of course, SCADA, our operational technology that runs our treatment plants, our water systems, our distribution systems. And of course, cybersecurity has been haunting all of us. It's been rearing its ugly head in our industry. As you may or may not know, there have been incidents reported throughout the United States and various activities. And then finally, cloud. Everyone is moving to the cloud because it's kind of the way of business. It allows for redundancies, allows for performance and scalability and all that good stuff. So although we interviewed 5 to 6 interested companies in the beginning of our RFP process, we only had 3 submitters, and those were all connected, Datalink and then Exact Technologies. As you might have noticed through the memo with all the giant attachment, with the help of Tarek from True Options Associates, we were able to perform a tremendous amount of work to thoroughly evaluate and interview the support firm candidates. Next slide, please. So through that process, all the information was provided to you. We're requesting to award the technology support services contract to Exact Technologies for the reasons listed here above here. So they have a CISIP. Not people know that what that means outside of the industry, but a CISIP is like the highest professional cybersecurity credential for a cybersecurity professional to have. So Exact Technologies has a CISIP in their company. They have licensed a cabling team, minimal employee turnover. That is critically important in this industry is employee turnover in regards to technology. They have highly qualified technical engineers. And the one super awesome thing that we learned over the past 5 years using Exact Technologies is that they have unlimited support service hours. So other companies we interviewed, they give you a cap. They give you 50, give you 60 hours, but limitless. And I can tell you some amazing examples of that, especially through COVID. Okay, you can imagine what we're going through to try to keep the business running. We're able to do some research and development with the Exact team and get things running and apply it to the business network and get people working from home or from wherever. And all that was because of limitless hours. And I wanted to also share, you know, just kind of give the perspective of what we're talking about here. So I looked into, I've had this information in my head for years and I've never had a chance to use it. But so I think years ago, someone was asking about benchmarks. And so I went and found some benchmarks. I found it's kind of hard because nothing's ever apples to apples. But the American Water Works Association, they put out a utility benchmark the document. And in that document, IT is one of the line items. And IT was spelled out. The medium was 5.2%, I think it was. The high, the 75 percentile was like 7-something%. And the low was like 3%. And so right now, our traditional IT staff we have internal to the company right now, we have about 7 IT, traditional IT people. And this contract here we're looking at equates to, it depends, there's some variables there, but equates to approximately 6 to 9 full-time employees, additional full-time employees. And I say 6 to 9 because what we have with a contracted service, we have 24 hours, 365. So we can go down to 6, but we're not getting 24/7, 365. They need to have a shift work. So that's why I say 6 to 9. Let me finish this off here. So this contract here is a total. This is a 3-year contract with 2 options. The 2 1-year options are the same amount of money, but the total equates to $1,929,790. That's for the total 5 years. Next slide, please. And I like to say before I conclude there, so that 1.9 million, just like when we started off back 5 years ago with the 1.6, and we got it down to 1.26, is because we internalize. We're constantly internalizing processes and trying to institutionalize this work. and what we're able to do in that first 5 years after year three, and all the work we were doing through year one through three and developing our staff and reaching out for additional staff was to internalize some of these processes. And so what we were able to do is reduce that overall cost by 21%. And if I was to guess it going forward, again, a lot of this is in the hands of our elected officials, but the plan here is to also continue to internalize some of the technical things we do in this organization. So some more of the technical things. I would say that again, the 1.9 million is a number that's in this proposal now, but I anticipate again reduction year four and five of this next coming contract as well when we negotiate at that point in time. So finally, the recommendation I'm asking for here is we're requesting that the Finance Administration Committee recommends the Board of Directors authorize the General Manager to enter into a 3-year contract with Exact Technologies for add needed technology services in the amount of not to exceed $1,109,790 with two options for renew for one of each per year at a cost not to exceed $410,000. That's for a total of $1,929,790 over the course of 5 years. So I'm joined here. I'm joined here to my left is Jeff Herbert, our IT supervisor. And then online, we have the amazing help we got from Tarek from True Options Associates. And we're here to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Perez. Do we have any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
Thank you. With that, do you have any questions from board members there? And Vice President Gutzeit, go ahead.
Hello. First of all, I love, and I know it can't always be done, but I love this scoring and evaluation, especially in areas where we're not experts. So, and it even explains what the SISIP is in there. So I like that. Quick question. It went down to 1.2, two quick questions. It went down to 1.29 million with, you taking on some of the stuff. Are you doing additional tasks or having them do additional tasks for the 1.9 million? Have they added things to the scope, or is it basically the same scope, just updated pricing because everything went up in cost?
It's a flip-flop. So what happened, I'm trying to communicate in the beginning there, is that we started off with a focus on business operations. Mm-hmm. And that was the focus in the first few years of the organization, getting things running and making sure they're all consolidated. But now we're flip-flopping. Now the hyper-focus is on cloud solutions. It's on cybersecurity. And the big, big, big lift is on SCADA. There's a tremendous amount of work that needs to be done on the SCADA space.
Right. So it's not apples to apples.
It's not apples to apples.
And then you had some percentages that you mentioned. It sounded like you were going to percent of budget spent on IT when you were saying like 5 to 9%, 2 to 3. I heard different percentages. Were you trying to say what a typical agency spends on IT?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. Those were benchmark employees.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Benchmark employees. Okay. So this proposal here could translate to 6 to 9 additional employees.
Okay. Okay, that's what that means.
And then in our industry, is in water, that's what the number is. It's 5.2% of total employees is the average IT.
IT department. So what is our current department?
We're at the traditional IT, we're at 7%. We're at 7 employees, full-time employees.
I know, but
so if you calculate ours, we would have 12.4 total employees if we were to use that benchmark.
Okay, so they're supplementing our current employees.
Correct.
And then last question. When you said you were able to offload some of the work and take it on with staff, are you planning to grow the department, or we think that this is the right way to handle it with outsourcing? I really like the 24/7 availability and I mean, maybe I'm answering my own question, you know, potential avoidance of overtime costs and things like that. But is there plans to grow our department so that we can take some of this work away from them? Or do we think this is the way to go, at least for the next 3 years?
Correct. That's the plan. I think I have a projection of employees and positions that I started back 5-6 years ago, kind of laying it all out, and it's been following the plan. And that's the idea. The more we can internalize, well, especially in light of what's going on the planet nowadays, you know, you can't have, you got to be really careful with what you outsource because of the nefarious activities that are happening now with cybersecurity. It just takes the wrong person, subcontractor, and they can feed information to whatever warring nations after us, and they can shut down our operations. So,
okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Right. And our 7 employees is less than 3% of our staff.
Director Colley, yielded the floor to.
So just a couple of real quick questions. First, let me comment. Very much appreciate you taking the time to be here in person for a presentation. I think that we're maybe a lot of us are kind of hoping that it gets around the agency that we prefer that to see your smiling face. Yeah. And so to both of you, thank you for, you know, I know that coming here on a Monday night is probably not the most exciting thing to do, but the fact that you did it is appreciated by, I think, everybody up here. The first question I've got is All Connect, you've got them local. Where are they locally? Where?
They're out of Ventura County.
Okay. So they're...
I believe they have a one of their employees is lives in the Santa Clarita Valley here. So I think they call themselves local because they have one person that lives out here and commutes out to Ventura County.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, and the exact is a little bit further out in...
Also Ventura County. Yeah, there's the Camarillo County. And then they have an office in Los Angeles.
Okay. So they're really both local-ish.
Yeah.
I don't see much difference there. I also would comment that out of all of the different kinds of things that can be done remotely, this kind of work would seem like the best candidate for for remote kinds of work.
Yeah.
The exact technologies, would they be offloading any of this work offshore? Would that be, or would they be able to handle all of it in-house?
Everything is in-house.
All right. I think those are my questions, so appreciate it. Thank you.
Director Armachalch.
Thank you. I want to offer that some board members actually think it's fine to present remotely. I know we have a difference opinion on that. I just wanted to put it out there. you know, I think
that doesn't mean you don't appreciate
it. No, I do appreciate you taking the time here, and it's always lovely to see you in person. However, we have the technology, and I think if some staff members choose to use it for whatever reason, I think that's perfectly okay. It saves people time. It saves people fuel. It helps with work-life balance. I think it's a perfectly valid option, but thank you for being here. thank you for your presentation also and for your very detailed memo as always. I do want to say I agree with Vice President Gutzeit. I really like the scoring summary you presented in there. It's really helpful to look at that kind of as a, I read everything, but then to kind of go back to that again and look at that is super helpful. So thank you for doing that. I did want to share some of the points that I thought were especially appreciated in your memo. So I appreciate that you shared that you did a reference check with vendor clients. I think that's important. I appreciate that you included that you identified hidden cost elements because sometimes that can come back to, you know, bite us later. So I appreciate that thought that was given to that. I'm always big on pushing cybersecurity, so it made me really happy to see that the people we're going with have the cybersecurity expert with that very specific certification, so that helps me sleep better at night. Thank you for that. You mentioned that the selected vendor has very little turnover, which I thought was important to mention as well. And then the unlimited support hours was, I think, very key too. So thank you for including all of that as information to us. One of my questions was already asked and answered. So the last one I have is, there's reference to BAFO throughout, and I couldn't find, maybe my brain didn't find it, but can you just remind us of what that is, please?
The BFAO.
Best and final.
I forgot to best and final offers.
Okay, thank you. I guess I could have Googled that, but I'm like, okay, thank you.
Yeah, sorry.
As opposed to the BARFO, which is really final offer.
Yeah, acronyms is famous for this side of the business. Chris, only one question I really had is, I never heard of True Options Associates before. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Oh, True Options. Yeah. So True Options Associates is a small firm. We utilized them in the past. We've used them for our last IRFP process 5 years ago. They were called, what were they called before? they were a different company and they changed names. It's a gentleman that's online with us right now, Tarek, and he does he helped us guide us through this process. So it's a consulting firm.
He did a nice job on that. I appreciate all the effort that went into it. And I think the other board members do too here. With that, do we have a consensus of the committee to take this to the board as the recommended action? And we'll put this on the consent calendar?
It seems like a lot of money.
Okay, all right, we'll try that.
Right. Thank you so much, Director Colley.
No, Bolivar, no.
All right. With that, we have item number four in the agenda package. Item five on my agenda here is the recommend approval of a revised classification plan and position control. Ms. Patterson.
So during the budget process, you know, each year, I feel like I say the same thing every time I do one of these. But during the budget process, we had identified there was a few positions that were approved to add to our class plan, but we didn't have a job description for them yet. We didn't have the job classification, nor did we do the salary survey yet. So we placed them where, for budget purposes, where we thought they fit, and some of them changed a little bit. And then we also have some change to a few of our job classification descriptions in here that make a little bit more sense. Next slide. Just bringing it back, you know, a lot of things that we're doing with the class plan have to do with career path advancement. We want to make sure we have some type of ladder so employees can see that there is a path, and we want them to have a clear path. So that's part of the job classification. It gives us, gives employees some clear definition of what it's going to take to get to the two or the three or the senior or the lead. Next slide. So for the overall process, a little bit of what I already went through the last time we approved. Back one. Two, keep going. There you go. That's okay. Just the last time we approved was after the budget in May of 2023. We did some, this particular time, some revised classifications to treatment plant operator, supervisor, treatment plant operator three, associate water research. I'll go through all of those. But the proposed new job classifications are in here. The class plan is in here because some of them had range changes, and also the position control, which tells you approve of how many positions are in each role. Next slide. So for the treatment plant operations supervisor, we had placed this supervisor at range 35 because that's where our most of all of our other supervisors are, especially on the operations side. But when we went out and did the salary survey, which is an attachment four with not our benchmark agencies, because not all of our benchmark agencies have treatment plants, but other treatment plant agencies, it came up a little bit higher at range 36. And it did make sense to us for one reason, is that this treatment plant operations supervisor is required to have a treatment grade five and a distribution grade five, which is a little bit higher than some of the other supervisors in that class. So for right now, for the current year, there's some savings because the position hasn't been filled yet. It was budgeted for about 8 months out of the year because we knew we needed to do a class and comp study and then fill it. We're a little bit late. So there is a little bit of savings for this budget year, and next year that extra range has our impact of about $7,000. And all of these budget impacts are fully burden rates, it's salary and benefits. Next slide. For the treatment plant operator series, there's no change of range, so there's no budget impact, but there is a change, a couple small changes to the classification plan, and it mostly has to do with changing the title. Instead of having a senior treatment plant operator, it's a treatment plant operator three. So when they went out and did the study to benchmark the supervisor series, it was more common to have a one, two, and a three than rather than a one, two, and a senior. And so we can compare ourselves with other like agencies. We felt it was best to change it to a three to be within the market. Next slide. On the water systems technician series, we have a couple vacant water system tech two positions, and we're proposing to fill those vacancies with the senior level. So the senior water systems tech does have a budget impact next year, but because those positions are vacant, there is a credit to there's less budget impact this year, going from range 28 to range 31. And part of our ladder or our progression is we always look for succession planning too. We need to fill some of these senior roles so they are prepared for that next step for retirements. Or with growth, we have some added treatment plants with PFAS to have a couple more seniors in that role. Next slide. On the inspector series, we had approved an inspector two position. We actually had recruited inspector two and that fell through. And so we're asking to change it to a senior inspector. And talking with Courtney, our chief engineer, you know, getting in some of the proposals that we have lately for inspectors for some of our projects, it's really, really pricey. And getting a senior inspector on staff rather than an inspector two can help eliminate some of those construction, those consultant costs. We have a small savings to the budget impact for this year. And then next year, the impact is about $7,200. And this position is funded by about 70% of capital funds. Next slide. The Water Resource Planner series, there's several job classifications in here because there are four that are in this series. There's the associate planner, the senior planner, and the principal planner. We have no change to the range that was proposed. So there's a savings to this year because the position hasn't been filled. It was budgeted as a mid-year promotion, but even if we get approval and we hire, we probably won't have them until March of this year. So there's no budget impact to next year. But we did hire CPSHR to do a class and comp study because the water resource specialist was new to the agency. But going through the essential functions of what we wanted the water resource specialist to do was very similar to some of the essential functions of the planner. But we wanted to have an opportunity to recruit more on the technical side and not necessarily on the planner side, but they have to know how to do both. There's a few of our positions that we have that have a split definition in the classification plan. In the classification description. So if they're working on one role, they have these essential functions. If they're focusing on another role, they have these essential functions. So what we did with the planner series is we added those technical essential functions. So if we want to recruit, we can put a focus on we're recruiting for a water resources planner with a focus on the technical aspect, and we can put that in our job posting. So next slide. The government affairs analyst, we did a class in comp. This was a new position, although it's not expected to come online until mid-year, next fiscal year. And when we did that class in comp, the comp came in a little bit less than what we had proposed. So there's no change this year because it wasn't budgeted this year, and it'll be about a $3,100 savings in the next fiscal year. So next. So under our financial considerations for this year, it looks like we'll save, based on the timing of the recruitments, of about $325,000 of our operating budget. And with all of these changes that are proposed to the budget impact for the next fiscal year is $23,030. So the recommendation, next slide, is for the Finance Administration Committee to approve the changes to the classification plan, the agency's position control, and all of those job descriptions that are included in your packet. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Rochelle. Any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
Thank you. And we have the big questions in front of us. Director Colley.
So don't have any direct questions on this, just something I'd like to see. When we first formed this agency and combined the other agencies, we got several years, we got data on the number of positions from the combined agency, how many deferred hirings we had, and things like that. I'd like you to resurrect that data that was typically given to us in a graphic form. And I'd like to see that anytime we get this kind of a presentation, I like to see the data presented from that 0 hour up till today. You know, I recognize the fact that there are things which require more work. You know, if we have more treatment plants for more ground pollution, it's going to require more work. I understand that. But we also have some things that are savings. We're not reading meters by hand anymore. So I'd just like to see where we stand relative to the number of new customers and that sort of thing. So if you could kind of put some thought into how you would keep the track of that data so that we can continue to see the savings, I'd appreciate it, or lack thereof, if that's the case. Thanks.
Question? Director Amarchaj.
Thank you. So thank you for the presentation. Thank you for the memo. I do appreciate the comment slash question that Director Colley just posed. And I will also say, kind of given the big picture effort that we've been kind of talking about over time to make sure that the agency can meet staffing and workload needs as things evolve, as it seems certain areas evolve more quickly than others. I appreciate the efforts to make sure that we're still offering fair compensation to staff, offering career path advancement. I think that's a huge one, and I appreciate the addressing that in the recent, over the last couple years, and adapting to the evolving technology and the roles. So generally, I'm supportive. I had a question, but it's changed because I think maybe I misunderstood. So let me ask. For the water systems tech being changed to being called senior water systems tech, it seemed counterintuitive to me to what you had explained first about the senior treatment plant operator being changed to treatment plant operator 3. And I thought, wait a minute, we're not being consistent, but maybe I'm misunderstanding. Do you mean that the water systems tech 2 positions still exist, but they're not going to be filled, like budget-wise? They're going to put a person in the senior position and hold those 2 positions open in the meantime?
No, so those 2 positions are meant to be filled, those 2 positions with seniors. If they're filled internally, then a 1 position can open up or a 2 position. But the progression of the 1, 2, and 3 for the treatment plant operators was to be consistent with other treatment plants agencies where they have a 1, 2, and 3. For the water systems, we only have a 1, 2, and a senior. On the utility side, we have a 1, 2, and 3 and a senior. So it just depends on what class that they're in and what job family. So this job family is different than the treatment plant. Yeah. These are, so it's on the distribution side rather than on this, on the treatment plant side, it's treatment within the distribution system. And that's where these workers are, but it is a tech 2. So we have 2 of those that are vacant. We're just asking to fill those with a senior, with senior positions.
So you're not changing the classification names?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. That's what was tripping me up. No. So, okay. And then lastly, for the water resource planner series. So you mentioned there's kind of a split. There's those that are serving the key, kind of what we're calling the key functions, and those that are going to serve kind of the more technical functions that also have to have the key function roles, right? So does this allow for the staff that's currently falling under the key roles to potentially have other career path avenues into these other roles as well? Assuming they meet the qualifications, if they...
They can, but it's at the same range. But okay. if they meet the technological requirements,
yeah.
To do that role, that they can, but there isn't any change of pay. It would be a lateral move, but they would still have the same title. But within the department, you could have different people do those different roles because it's now all in the job classification.
Okay. That's all I had. Thank you.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Sorry, I'm having a bad brain fade right now, but I had a question about the senior water resources planner. Also, how does this person fit in is this person already here and we're reclassifying or
no? So we had proposed during the budget process to actually add a new classification, which is a water resource specialist. And the idea was that we would hire a biologist, a geologist, an IST of some sort on the science side,
right,
to support the water resources department.
Right.
But as we were going through the class and comp study and going through the essential functions of what we wanted this role to be, it was very similar to the role we already had, but it was missing that technical piece.
Mm-hmm.
So it was rather than having, because we've also been talked to about having too many classifications, mm-hmm. different classifications, right. to combine the classifications since the central roles were similar, but we could recruit by splitting it. We can recruit by we're focusing on the technical side or we're focusing on the planner side, but we'd be using the same classification.
Okay, so... And this is where I'm having a bad brain pain. Mm-hmm. The person that replaced Dirk is
Ali, who we are.
Is this under?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. That's what I want to make sure. And then I thought it was odd, actually, there's a lot of, analysis, technical skills, but then there's using stream flow measurement devices. Does this person really go out in the field and do stream flow measurement and water levels?
Yes.
Really? Well, that is very hands-on because master's degree is welcome, but okay. Just want to make sure. I thought that was odd. And then on the government affairs analyst, again, trying to place where
this is going. We have our state lobbyists. We have our federal lobbyists. We've always talked about, at least at POL, when we let go of the local lobbying function, that we would replace that with the in-house. But the description doesn't really talk about local specifically. Can you explain? Well, let me say, like, they wouldn't be duplicating what the state or federal is doing. So what are they doing?
Well, I think Steve and Ollie are on the call, so they might be able to tell us. But I know it was to kind of replace some of the functions that Kathy Martin was doing when she was here. So if Steve or Ollie would like to address the government affairs analyst position.
Here I am. If you can hear me.
Yes,
we can hear you.
Okay, great. Yeah, thank you, Director Goodsight. Still sticking with you guys, long meeting tonight. So, I think generally speaking, Maria, this person is going to help manage the federal and state lobbyists, right? So they'll pay more attention to that as a staff member. And then they will also be responsible for the local duties. So if that's not captured in the current job description, we'll probably make a couple edits, but that was the intent.
Okay, no, that actually is captured in the job description, because it talks about analyzing impact, which I appreciate, because, you know, one thing I would like is always when we have discussions, you know, what does it mean to the agency? What does the agency need to do? So having them do that, I think, would be good, because we're not getting that now. And then, yes, I knew it included local when we talked about replacing or Kathy Martin's position, or, you know, the old contract for local. So that's in there, but the analyzing part, I didn't understand what they would do with that, but that is in the description. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The only comments is that this is kind of like a second run at the budget process that we did last year. With these positions, all we're doing is trying to do the thing that is required of us to approve these job classifications and ranges that the staff has been working on. I do have one question that I saw that in the last report of the department, and I was wondering what we're standing on our recruitment processes right now. How many open positions? What are recruitments going on? We haven't had a status of that for a while.
Yeah, we don't. It's included in our admin section report, right. But I don't recall.
Yeah, me neither.
10-ish?
I see Ari.
Almost 10 recruiting.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. That's for 10. Yeah. And that's for 10 positions, correct? That are open presently.
Yes.
Not these newer.
No.
No. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. A lot of work for HR staff. All right. With that, may I have the pleasure of the thumbs up, and we will bring that towards the board as a recommendation to approve and
consent.
Consent. I always cautious about consent, especially last board. with that, we'll move on to item number 5 in your board packet, number 6 on my agenda here, and it's recommend receiving and filing the November 2023 monthly financial report. Ms. Patterson.
So this is just a monthly report, not the quarterly, so it's not as in depth and detail, but our revenues for November were under budget by about $1 million. Our expenses were under budget by about $300,000. And at the end, we have still have a net increase, and our net position still increased by about $2.9 million. And that's primarily due to the PAYGO capital plan is under budget by about $3.2 million. Our year to date, we are under budget in our water sales or our revenues by about $10.9 million. under budget in our expenses, though, by about $6.7 million. And that we have an increase to our net position of $22 million, but that's still primarily the capital PAYGO, which is about $24 million under budget. And I didn't have anything else in the report. We've just, in our top 10 disbursements, we've we're paying some of our, paying down some of our 2023 bond with the Earl Schmidt Filtration Plant wastewater project. We paid a state water contract payment. And we paid lots of Edison invoices, but there isn't any surprises on there. So if anybody else has any questions.
Okay. Any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
Any questions from the board members? With that, we move it on unanimously. So item number, next item on the agenda is the Roche, the committee planning.
Yeah. So in February, as I've mentioned before, we're working on quite a few employee manual policies that are being updated. We'll also be reviewing our budget calendar since it's that time of year again. Looking to create an internal control policy ahead of our May field work for our audit. And then also in February is our mid-year budget versus actual report. This kind of kicks off our budget because that's our mid-year. We'll use those numbers to forecast for the remainder of fiscal year 2023 and 2024. And then we'll use those numbers then to look at what we had already had proposed for our fiscal year 24-25 budget. And then in March, we will review the CPI and any proposed COLA changes for fiscal year 24-25. And those are the highlights for the next month.
Any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the board? I just have one. Is this the year that we pick a new auditor?
We're still have the option to extend 1 year. Oh. So we are extending this year and we will be have a new auditor the following year.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. We move on to the next item. Request for future agenda items. Director Colley.
So several times over the last few years, there's been kind of discussions on things related to committee structure, board meeting, timing, structure. And I'm not aware of anybody taking up those discussions yet. I'd like to basically ask that agenda planning send that discussion back down to us on this committee. So, I think that this committee is quite capable of starting the discussion. So if we can get it agendized so that we can begin the discussion here, obviously that's a discussion that will need to go to the full board and probably for quite a bit of discussion. But I keep hearing possibilities that maybe we're going to eventually talk about it, but it hasn't happened in a long time. So I'm trying to kind of set that in motion. By specifically asking the agenda planning, send it back down to us as an agenda item. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments from the board members? With that, do we have any public comment?
We don't have any public comment, but General Manager Stone has made himself visible, and I'm wondering if he'd like to comment.
Yeah. Well, diplomatically, I guess I would suggested how the board constructs its committees as a board matter. And I want to make sure we're utilizing the time of this committee appropriately. I understand the frustration behind the comment, but it might be more appropriate to either discuss it at the board level or at an ad hoc committee for that purpose. And you might have a conversation with, you have the vice president of the board sitting next to you, but you might have a conversation with the board president to see if some kind of solution could be found to that unmet request.
Well, I think the if it goes to, if my suggestion gets its way to the agenda planning committee, they will then discuss, presumably they won't just simply ignore the request. It may not come to pass that it gets sent back down to this committee. That's just a suggestion. But I would hope that at least doesn't get ignored and that something happens with the suggestion at that level. Okay. Again, I'm not going to be super offended if it doesn't come back to this committee. That's just a possibility. And my intent is to get the discussion to take place. Thanks.
Very good. Thanks.
Right. Next to the last item is the general report on finance and administration activities.
I just have one, and it's a really quick presentation. And thank you, Kathleen Wilson, for putting it together. I streamed it down just a little bit. Okay, you can go ahead and go to the next slide. So if you remember, we had applied to the arrearage program in 2021. We received about $671,000, and that was to cover commercial and residential services that had incurred arrearages due to COVID during the COVID relief period from March 4th, 2020 through June 15th, 2021. We received it. It was posted to our accounts, about 2,000 accounts in February 2022. There were a handful that needed to be sent back. It was about 2,000 customers where we were able to apply their arrearages to. Next slide. So they still had money because I think they were expecting a lot more arrearages than they got. So they have extended the program. So in December of 2023, the agency applied for about $250,000 in relief for about 1,300 customers for commercial and residential. And those were the COVID period was June 16, 2021 to December 31st, 2022. So it's a separate program, but it's treated almost identical in the way we need to contact our customers. Next slide. So the funding disbursements are expected to begin in February of 2024. And then once we receive the funding, there's rules. And one of the rules is we have to send a letter to the customers within 60 days and post the credits and notify the recipients in writing, which is a letter that states how much they are receiving that will be credited to their bill. So that's our update of the newest arrearage program, and we did apply for it for about $250,000. And that concludes my report.
Any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
All right. Well, thank you for all the staff to hang in there. we have a question. Director Armitage.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, I know this is the end of the meeting, but I really appreciate that information. I'm glad we got that in at the last part of the meeting because I think it's really important. The question was the 1,300 customers for that additional cycle, is that additional customers on top of the 2,000 so that there was a total of like 3,300-ish customers?
Yeah. First program covered about 2,000 customers.
Additional. So we were able to take advantage of approximately $1 million. Am I doing the math right in my head? Overall, to help about 3,300 customers get up to date with their payments. That's amazing. I just want to say thank you. I'm sure that was a lot of work involved, probably a lot of paperwork. So thank you to you and your team for making that happen. I'm assuming we're trying, if those customers are continuing to struggle, that we're tapping them into the ratepayer assistance program. Okay, I'm getting a nod. So thank you so much. That's really important work and it's very much appreciated. So thank you.
Vice President Gusak.
What happens if people already paid? They get a credit to their bill.
Okay. So if they were eligible, but they scraped and scrimped and paid it,
they will get a credit on their bill.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. The last item on the agenda is adjournment. And thank you for all hanging in there again.
Thank you.